time to be educated and entertained by the country's most famous environmental scientist. Joey B has researched grizzly bears, wolves, and birds of prey. He continues to travel all across America to bring you the very best that nature has to offer. Be ready to be amazed. Here's your host, Joey B.
Hello and welcome to Joey B's Outdoor Adventure. Man, do I have the coolest job. I travel all across America to bring you the very best that nature has to offer. Today, on a rainy summer day, I've got my great friend in the studio here, Inspector Dave. Great to have you.
Thanks for having me, Joey B.
You know something, Inspector Dave? And we'll get to some of the rain about watering in the garden, but it's one of those really cool summer storms out there. You know, glass enclosed studio here looks pretty neat.
Yes, it does. And rain, it's nature. It's feeding all our plants for us.
Okay. It's free water, too. That's a good thing. Well, today it's all about the midsummer, that midpoint in the garden. So it's about where do we need to be and what we should... Well, I can't speak today. I'm excited about the garden. What should we be doing? So what's happening in your garden right now?
Well, this is the peak time now for those of us who started our gardens early in the spring with the promise of things growing and fruits and vegetables. This is when it all comes together. It's the midsummer time where we're harvesting at its peak. The plants are growing like crazy, and we're just having a good time out there doing what we love to do, be in the garden.
Well, I took a walk over to your organic garden. You and your beautiful wife, Diane, happened to be out. I walked through the garden, and let me tell you, it is spectacular going right now. And again, I know the abundance of the crops that you get in there too. So my first question to you is, how should we be protecting ourselves inside the garden?
Well, remember now, it's summer. It's super hot. The sun is very hot. The UVs are very strong. So you should be out there wearing your sun hat every time you go out. A sun shirt, long sleeve, I always wear to protect my arms. You should be wearing your sunblock and also sunglasses to protect your eyes whenever you can. And if you're into bug repellent, if you have a problem with insects, you should be getting a little bug repellent of some type on you also. Remember, self-protection. You don't want to get all beat up by the bugs in the sun, so you want to spend as much time in the garden as you can.
And you know something? I'm just going to throw one more thing in there, and that's hydrating too, because that's protecting your body as well. Now, when we're out there harvesting, is this work to you? Is this play? What is it to you?
Well, we think of harvesting as like, hey, this is what it's all about. But harvesting is actually a lot of work. I find some days that it's as much work as early spring when you're digging holes and planting your plants and putting stakes in, because you have to kind of wade yourself through the garden a little bit, because we always don't get the spacing 100% right. So we're being careful. So we're stepping around, trying to keep our balance. And we're trying to make sure we don't damage the plants in any way. And we're trying to find all the fruit. Some of the leaves are very large, like on a squash or a cucumber. Things are hidden. So we're looking down, bending down, standing on our head sometime, trying to find every fruit that's out there, every vegetable, so we can get it off the plant before it gets too large.
You know something, and I know that's true, and we're always out there looking, and one of the summer squash you brought over was a little bit larger than you typically do, because sometimes they just get away from us. With the thick leaves, sometimes you just don't find it all. And that's what... I guess organic gardens, because they are so lush. Again, if that's a problem, that's a good problem to have. So what type of tools should I be using in the garden?
When we're out in the garden, remember, we're going to be out there. You should be out there every day for harvesting to keep an eye on the plants because, again, things grow very rapidly. I can pick cucumbers in one day, and I go out the next day, and it's like, there's five more. Like, where'd they come from? It's like they grow overnight. So the tools that we should have should be readily available. I keep mine in a little old mailbox that I have mounted near the garden. So I always have either a knife or a pruner or a cutter of some type, because you want to make sure you have tools to get the vegetables off the plant so you don't damage the plant. We'll talk a little bit more about that. And also keeping those tools clean. Because remember now, you're going from plant to plant, and if you have some disease on there, you want to make sure that the knife or the cutters are not spreading that disease from plant to plant. So I keep just bleach wipes. It works pretty well. Some people use like a vinegar mix. There's a few different ways, but you want to make sure you keep your tools clean and sanitary so you don't spread disease around.
And you know something? Because I have some of my hot chili peppers growing in your garden over there, the Tambora Cruz right now, which is so prolific. And I know where your mailbox is back there. I know where your tools are. I know how you take care of your tools. So I then use your tools, harvest what I want out of the garden, and then I put your tools back because, hey, if you're borrowing something from someone, they should be brought back. And this show is brought to you by Ramsey Outdoor Stores. Whether you shop online or in one of their stores, your experience will successfully gear you up for your next adventure. Go to RamseyOutdoor.com. So, Inspector Dave, I've just now harvested something. How do I get the produce back into the house?
Well, this sounds like a simple question, but it really, if you do it wrong, you can undo all that work. You imagine you just pick a handful of tomatoes and you say, well, I'll just bounce them on my hand and on my arm and try to get back to the house with them. Next thing you know, you drop one on the ground, it splats, it's cracked. Now all that time and the promise of that great tomato is lost into just a little pile on the ground there. So nothing's more annoying than dropping fruit. So take the time to take a little bag with you or a basket or whatever, something to carry your things in, because you're going to go out there and say, I'm going to pick one or two things. Next thing you know, you've picked 10 or 12 things and you're trying to balance them, and you don't really want to do that. I also like to use a colander for a lot of my smaller items so that I can rinse off the produce right away before I bring it in the house.
That's pretty cool. And I've noticed with the colander, you have it out there and you got the hose right there. So, yes, you can do that. And as you're describing, I'm thinking about growing up my old Italian grandma with a big old apron out there in the garden. And as she cut away or picked away, whatever it was inside the fold of that apron. She'd be holding it up and that's how she would walk inside. Again, I was real little. I don't remember if she ever dropped anything, but knowing grandma, she was good with the hands there. I don't think so. Now, is there a method I should follow when I'm out there picking?
Yes, most of the vegetables that you're going to be picking need to be cut off of the plant. Now, something like a tomato or a string bean, you can just kind of pick those barehanded and put them in your little container. But anything else you're picking, whether it's eggplants or peppers, cucumbers, squash, they need to be cut off of the plant because you don't want to tear them off. Because you can damage the plant, you can break the branch off, which is going to make the plant weaker. You can cause wounds on the plant, which will invite disease and insects. And also, you can just damage the fruit that you just picked, like a cucumber. You got to try to go, I'll just pick it off real quick, and you don't get a little piece of stem with it, and now you have like a blemish on the end or an open thing, so the wound is going to leak. You're going to lose some moisture from the cucumber, and if you're going to try and store it for a little while, it's not going to store as well. Or if you're going to give it to somebody, it's like embarrassing. Like, you don't know how to pick a cucumber, you got to give me one that's damaged. So it's very important that you always use tools. Even I'm going after one cucumber. No matter when you go out there, force yourself to always take a tool with you so that you don't damage the plant just because you're in a hurry or being careless.
And you know something? You're obviously, and you mentioned this, but you're slowing down production when you every time you damage a plant. And if you're damaging a plant for a fruit and a fruit and a fruit, well, then its production is, you know, when it comes late in that season, when you normally would get a few more fruits, you're not, because the plant has had to spend so much time to repair itself. Now, this is a question that so many people ask me. And by the way, if you have any questions, you could tweet me at Joey B Outdoors. That's J-O-E-Y-B-E Outdoors. Get many questions from you. And this is a common question we get. How do I know when my vegetables are ready to get picked?
Well, that comes with experience. Some of the things are pretty simple, like a tomato. Obviously, when it's very red, that's the time to pick it. You want to leave it on there as long as you can so it's vine ripened for the maximum flavor and nutritional value and juiciness that you'll have in there. Other plants such as beans, you might maybe pick them on a more tender side. Eggplants, as soon as the skin is shiny, you can pick those at any size. You know, cucumbers, pretty much you can pick them at any size. So it's what sizes you want for the dishes you're picking, and how you, whether you're trying to impress someone with a 2 foot cucumber, or not cucumber, a 2 foot squash that somebody wants to reupholster, you know, dig it out and stuff it, or just small, tasty, tender squash. So looking at that, looking at the pictures in the magazines that you'll see, looking at things in the store, gives you an idea of what a ripe vegetable or fruit should look like.
And you know something, as you're describing all of this, I forgot to tell you the story. I went down to visit my folks. You had given a few cucumbers to bring down there. I mean, niece Gabby sees it by the counter and she goes, those are the biggest pickles I ever saw. So just a fun little thing from Gab. Now, you tend to pick them on a smaller side. And is that because you like the flavor? What's your reasoning behind that?
Well, there's several reasons for picking smaller. One is, the fruits can be a lot tender. The skins won't be as thick on the outside. Something like a cucumber, the seeds will be very small inside, so you won't get the bitterness of the seed or the digestion problem, or have to scoop it out because the seeds are too big and you don't want to eat them. So you can eat the whole cucumber. Eggplants, I find that the skin is way more tender. And again, as long as they're shiny, you can pick them. Corn is one of those things you have to kind of let it go till the tassels are dry on there. And you can pick the poke the little corn kernel with your thumb and make sure there's some milky liquid coming out. Peppers, you can pick them kind of at any size. Longer you leave them, though, certain varieties, like the blushing lady or the pink lady that we're growing this year, is we let it go so it gets a little pink or a little reddish on the green so we know it has maximum flavor. So some things are better a little bit longer on the vine. Tomatoes, of course, you want to leave on there as long as you can. Squash, I like them smaller. I think they're more tender. And squash can be very prolific. So unless you have a lot of friends and neighbors that love squash, you want to pick them small so you don't get overwhelmed when the squash are peeking out in the middle of the summer.
Well, you know something, when you go to an upscale restaurant, most of their vegetables that they're serving sides of whatever your main course is, they are smaller ones because, as you mentioned, they are tasty. And you also mentioned something about picking things and looking at the peppers and the colors. And I'll just throw this in that peppers have a different flavor and a different, if you have hot peppers, have a different amount of heat at all the different colors. So you should taste the pepper at the different colors and you're going to find a different taste. Because it's funny, some of them will actually get a little bit sweeter but a little bit hotter as time goes on. So that's a little bit of experimentation as to where you like the taste and the amount of heat with those hot peppers. So now my next question, as you're discussing all this picking, is what time of the day should I harvest?
Well, I feel that a lot of the harvesting should be done early in the morning before the sun is really on your plants strong, because the nutrition and the maximum flavor will be up into the plant over the night when the sun's not on it. And then during the day, the plant's going to look to protect some of those nutrients, and it's going to put them back down lower in the plant or down into the to the root system. So I think for maximum flavor, early in the morning is better. And it's better for you, too. You're not out there in a 90 or 100-degree sun trying to pick things. Right? It's cooler then, and it's a nice time to be out in the garden early in the morning. You know, even picking beans, those you have to be a little careful if there's a lot of dew, because you don't want to pick beans when the plants are wet, because that can spread disease. But beans definitely taste better early in the morning. And even corn, a lot of people say, well, I got to pick corn and throw it in the pot like within 5 minutes. But a lot of the nicer organic corns that I use, the non-GMO corns that I grow, have a shelf life on them, so that's good for a couple of days. So there's no difference whether you pick it in the morning or 5 minutes before you put it in the steamer, to eat it. In fact, we just had our first 2 years last night. Oh, boy, got to have it. Sweet corn is the best.
You know, it's funny, and I've eaten so many things, and I know what I talk about, like, what's your favorite in a garden? I know it's that corn, and I haven't gotten any yet because you got the first 2 years. But when I do, that corn is absolutely spectacular. And I was actually watching a commercial on television about Rachel Ray, who I happen to know, her good friend. And Rachel Ray lathering up the corn with all this other stuff to eat it. And your corn, you don't need butter. You don't need sauce. You don't need anything. You just eat it. It is spectacular, spectacular corn. Now, here's my next question. You alluded to this before. Should I rinse my produce while I'm still outside?
Yes, you should always rinse it on the outside of the home, because you may have some dirt on it from a rain splash. So why do you want to bring that dirt in the house? Rinse it off outside. It'll go back into the lawn or wherever you're rinsing it. And also, if there's any little bugs are on there, you want to shoo them off with the water outside so they're not flying around your kitchen. And my wife gets really mad when the bugs come in on the produce. So I really am careful and make sure that the produce is well rinsed outside. And then, of course, they get a secondary rinse in the house, with the tap water and all. So, and that's if you're spraying your garden too with any type of disease prevention, you want to make sure you want to leave that stuff outside. You don't want to drag that anything into the house. Even though it's organic sprays you're using, there may be an odor or something like that if you have fish emulsion on them or kelp. Why stink up the house? So do them outside.
Makes sense to me. Now, in every garden, and this is the great thing about it, it is that bounty. So what do I do with my surplus?
Well, some people like to can their surplus and freeze it and package it. I personally do not get involved with that, because my theory is if I'm growing it fresh, it should be eaten fresh. If I can't use it myself, My network of friends and neighbors and family will be able to use all that. So I spend early part of the season, people know I garden, I start talking around, and I find people that appreciate what I'm growing. You're going to treat it properly. And I have a good core of people now I know, okay, and I keep kind of a list, so I rotate through. And I make sure that they get the fresh produce, and you know, getting that feedback from people. They're very cooperative, and some people even fish me a dish out of it. I have one of my friends. I give her a lot of squash, and she made a butternut squash soup for me, and so I've been eating that. And so that's fun to get stuff that you make, and then it comes back to you. I have another friend we give eggplants to, and he invites us over for eggplant parmesan dinner all the time. So he's Brazilian, so he really knows how to make his eggplant parm. So we have a lot of fun just giving it out. And there's time where if I'm really overwhelmed, the dog walker, somebody going by the house who may be a total stranger, I may give them some cucumbers or squash if I'm really, really overwhelmed with stuff and just can't connect with my friends. So it's there's always places you get rid of fresh produce. I mean, one year I even put a table out with tomatoes on it on the front lawn and just said free with bags. And that was a fun experiment to watch. Whether people would just clear the table off or just take a few and leave some. And my faith in human nature was restored because every single person that came just took a few for themselves and left some for the next person.
And that is a nice testament to our society. And the other cool thing, as you mentioned that, because we do want to eat fresh, and because, for example, I grow a chiltepin, which is this tiny little pepper, which I happen to crush from my dried red pepper seed. So I am picking and drying and picking and drying. And at the end of the season, I will actually crush that from a red pepper seed. And I'll just use the Tambora Cruz that I'm growing in your garden right now, because I do pickle, I do jar. And that is the best pickling pepper that is out there. You can get it from chiliplants.com. I used to do research out there with them. And I'm going to say that because it is so bountiful, I actually still have to give some away. My buddy Dan, he's a big, we call them chili heads, you know, people that love hot stuff. So I give Dan a few of them as well. Now, if I have that excess bounty and I'm not jarring, how can I store my bounty?
Well, there's a couple ways to do this. And the main thing you have to think about is what it is first. And let's talk about tomatoes. A lot of people make that mistake of putting tomatoes in the refrigerator. You should never refrigerate tomatoes. It really takes away a lot of the flavor. And you can be very disappointed in that tomato. I said, wow, it should taste really good. The magazine said it was the best like tomato ever. You made it cold. You put it in the refrigerator. It changed the composition of the flavor elements in there, and it's going to not taste as well. So you don't need to refrigerate tomatoes. Majority of everything else that I grow, I do keep in the refrigerator. I'll put them in a crisper, maybe in a plastic bag. And again, you shouldn't be storing things for a week at a time. You're growing it fresh. You should be eating it within a couple of days, you know, if possible. And then other things like winter squash, things like that, just in cool place. If you don't have room in the refrigerator or you don't want to refrigerate it, just keep it in a cool, drier area, and that's the best way to store things. Like winter squash, you can store those for months, you know, in your basement or a cold cellar if you have it. So just think about, if you're not sure, see what they do at the grocery store. How do they store it at the grocery store when it's for sale? And that'll give you an idea. Does it really need to be kept cold, or will it last a couple of days on the counter?
Nate, now, what should I be looking at when I'm harvesting?
You should be enjoying yourself out there. I mean, this is one of the trips to the garden where, okay, we're focusing, like, I've got to get the cucumber, I got to get the pepper, and you're looking at, and you're just, your mind is racing ahead. But slow down, enjoy the bees. Enjoy the flowers that are on the different plants, and there's such a variety of blossoms that you can see on a plant. Enjoy the butterflies that may be coming around. And looking at the plant, just enjoying the greenness of it and the lushness of the plant and how it's growing its habitat. And also looking for disease and looking for storm damage that may be on there, because you want to attend to that right away. If there's a windstorm the night before or a heavy rain and you maybe have a broken branch, you need to prune it back and take the weight off it or tie things up a little bit better. And also, you might get lucky and see a praying mantis at work, or ladybugs or aphid lines at work, or you may see a tomato hornworm. You want to look for those on your tomato plants, and that's a big green worm. And you'll know where he is. He blends in very well, but you'll see little black droppings under where he is, and he'll start eating your leaves and start eating your fruit too. So you want to get him out of there as soon as you can, unless you see little cocoons on his back, little white cocoons, and those are eggs from a parasitic wasp that attacks that, and those you want to save because you want those wasps to go into that host hornworm and then blossom into regular insects and get out and take out more hornworms. And the hornworm, it's a really cool thing to look at because it's got like a little horn on the back of it, like a little stinger, but they usually won't bother you. Just pick them off with a pair of tweezers or something and throw them in some water.
And as you're describing all of that, and again, I am the proverbial morning guy, being up at 4:35 o'clock every morning. And mornings, just mornings in general to me, whether you're outside and I'm walking through my perennial flower gardens, it's just spectacular. You mentioned about the insects, but here I am, the snake guy, and I'm walking through, and just maybe garter snakes or DK snakes, some of the smaller guys. But as I'm walking through there, and they're out, and they're prowling and on the hunt, and that's a really neat thing. Now, I know that I'm Joey B. Do I have to worry about bees in the garden?
Not generally. The honeybees are going to be out there, and the other pollinating bees, they're just out there to pollinate, and they have a job to do, and they'll just kind of fly along. If you come along, they'll just flit over to the next flower. The only thing you should be careful of, if there's yellow jackets or any kind of ground-dwelling bees that maybe a nest may be nearby, that's the only time you'd have a problem. So you should kind of keep an eye out on the ground. If you see bees flying in and out of the ground at a particular spot, then you may want to stay away from that area. But most of the bees that are out pollinating, you know, there's no problem. I've never gotten stung, you know, when I'm out there picking things, and there's bees all over the place, you know, early in the morning. And it's a fun time. You hear them buzzing around, and even the big bumblebees, you know, they kind of come by you, but they don't bother you. You might see a cicada, and if you disturb a cicada that's molting, coming out of the ground, you know, he's going to take off like a 747 by your head, but he's not going to bother you. Even the other day, for some reason, the last couple of days after every little rainstorm, I have a whole squadron of dragonflies by the front door, and I don't quite know. I've never had it before, but there's just 10 or 20 of them out there at a time, like buzzing around, eating mosquitoes and gnats, and I don't know why they're there. There's no water thing there for them to go to, no pond or bird bath, but they're out there, and we go out. They just kind of move around and fly around us. They don't bother us.
No, insects, because there are so many beneficial insects, they are definitely our helpers, and as you mentioned about the bumbles, I have this huge perennial echinacea garden, purple coneflower out in the front, and through that whole garden, early in the morning when I'm out there, they're just buzzing around, and probably a couple of relatives of mine, you know, but they're just buzzing around, so they are absolutely fine. Bees are definitely our friends for sure. Now, should I be, and how should I be then, checking for disease out there?
Well, that's going to be a visual inspection of the plants as you're walking through your garden, looking at things. You should also be having an eye out to the plant, looking for wilt on the plant, damaged leaves that just look funny, have a different color. And there's lots of pictures. You can go online or in your gardening magazines or books and just look for different pictures, and they'll show you what's going on. Like tomatoes, there's like so many different diseases that can hit tomatoes. And then as you get into the more humid times now, your squash, your cucumbers, you got to start watching for the mildews that could occur in mold. That could occur in these plants. So you want to really, the plant's growing really fast now because it's outgrowing any disease problem that you probably have. But at some point, disease is going to catch up, and then you're going to, production will be lost on the plant a little bit. So you may want to treat for disease somewhere along the line if you do find some.
Well, you know, something I think that would be a great show, another topic, or that topic for another show. So I'm sure we'll get back in the studio another day and talk about disease and actually the entire care from beginning of the season straight on. So definitely we'll be talking about that. Now, as the season's going on, do I have to keep tying and staking up my plants?
Well, depending on your plants, and my plants, I tie them right up to the bitter end. Plants are growing fast. We talk about early in the season preparing your plants for storms by having good cages, good stakes, heavy stuff that can handle a thunderstorm or a big windstorm going through. And it's the same now. Your plants are getting big. The different limbs or parts of the plant will have heavy fruit on them, so you want to keep tying them up so your plants won't break either from the weight of the fruit on it or from wind or heavy rain that may be coming through. So yes, you want to keep going, and you may have to even make your stakes higher. Like you may think, hey, that stake's plenty high enough. Next thing you know, your 4-foot stake is overwhelmed. You need another 2 feet, so you got to get another stake in the ground next to it.
I know that I will be back in your garden the next day or so because that Tanvera cruz is outgrowing, as you said, it outgrew the stake, and we've got to put a taller one inside of there, so I'll be back over. Now, the critters, and we've got raccoons and skunks and possums and lions and tigers and bears, like they're all here. What about the critters and what about insect damage? And I know you alluded a little bit with the insect damage, but how do we take care of that?
Well, the critters, again, that's one of the main things that people really get frustrated with. The critters are watching the garden as closely as you are. So they're waiting maybe for the fruit to get a little bit bigger, a little tastier, a little juicier. So especially like your corn, the raccoons maybe keeping an eye on it. So the day you're ready to go out and pick it, you go out there and the raccoons got all your corn. You know, or somebody gnawed away on some of your winter squash you've been thinking about, you know, storing that. Now it's got a gnaw mark on it, so it's not going to store well. Or just they'll maybe bite off the whole top of a plant, a bean plant or something. So critter damage is something you always got to be on the alert for, and that's why you want to go out every day. So if a critter comes before he has a chance to tell his friends and really get a taste for things in your garden, you can take preventive medicine to keep them out, whether you're using repellents of some type, sending your pets out a little more often at different times of the night, or using an ultrasonic thing, or putting up a shock fence, you know, whatever way you need to protect your plants as much during the early part of the season where they go after the tender crop. Now they're going after the tender fruits. So critter damage always keeps coming. And insect damage, the same thing. The squash vine borers may be coming around now. So if you see your squash vine, all of a sudden one day it's super healthy, the next day it's like limp and laying there, that means the borers may have gotten into it. So you have to either remove that plant or treat for the borers. And the same thing with anything you see, things getting eaten on the plant that look unusual. Cucumber beetles are coming around. The Mexican bean beetles are coming around. All the things you read about in the magazines and in the books, you know, they're pretty much always going to visit your garden. You know, most of them are pretty common everywhere you go for gardening. So you want to make sure you have a method to control them, whether it's hand-to-hand combat or some type of deterrent that you're using, or an organic method to control them.
Well, I know you're talking about the hand-to-hand combat. I don't think you're talking about hand-to-hand with the raccoons, but it's with the insects there.
Yes.
Now, I just remember that as you're discussing all that, early on, I used to have the cantaloupes growing in the back, and every time that I thought I was going to pick one, I'd say, well, that cantaloupe will be ripe tomorrow. I can't wait. And I'd come out there, and the raccoon would take a bite out of it, and I'd be like, dang. And I realized that I had to pick them a day prior to, and this year, my front gardens with my strawberries, it was a wrestling match between me and the chipmunks. And the chipmunks actually, hey, and I don't mind sharing with critters, but the chipmunks would just bite into one and then bite into the next one and not finish one. Hey, I don't mind if they take one and finish it, but they never did. So that battle continues for me. And that's I have a couple ideas. And like you always talk about experimentation, we'll experiment next year about trying to look around here a little bit more critter control. Now, during this time of the year, should I continue to fertilize the plants?
Yes, there's a reason you need to fertilize now. The plants are under stress from a number of things. First, from production. So they're using up a lot of the stored nutrients that are in the ground and in that immediate root system of the plant. So that needs to be replenished because the soil and the plant itself may be getting exhausted of some of the nutrients that it needs. And the plants are so big, there is a possibility the plant is sort of outgrowing the root system a little bit, because the roots just maybe don't grow quite as fast, or maybe your soil's a little heavy, so the roots don't spread out quite as much. Hopefully, they are doing really well. So you may want to put a little fertilizer, granular fertilizer, or liquid fertilizer in the root zone to feed that plant right away. And heavy feeders, you know, such as eggplants and even squash and cucumbers, these are very heavy feeders, so they take a lot of nutrients out of the soil. Corn also, they're heavy feeders, so you have to kind of give them a little bit of a boost there.
At this time of the year, do you foliar feed? That's feeding through the leaves?
Yes, foliar feeding is a wonderful way to get over plant stress. It's especially good during very hot weather when it's dry out, the plant's under stress. That's a good way to wet the leaves down and to get some nutrients into the plant. And there's early morning is the best time to foliar feed. You want to get out there before the sun really gets on the plant so that the plant can absorb almost all of the nutrients that you're putting on, whether you're using fish emulsion or kelp or a mixture of the two. Those are great ways to feed your plant and a foliar method. And you have that in your head better than me, like what part of the plant absorbs that.
Now, you know, we have an international audience. We have a lot of people from Europe and a lot of people from South America listening to our shows. And one of the things now, let's just talk about, because I can't address the issues worldwide, but there's a problem now with drought being a big part of climate change. Well, How does drought affect the garden?
Well, water is a necessary thing to have in your garden. Without water, your plants aren't going to grow. So you have to, you know, set up some type of irrigation system that uses your water that you do have, whether it's from rain barrels or a well or a pond or hopefully some natural source other than city water, so that whatever water you're using is not being wasted to evaporation. So soaker hoses, drip hoses, subsurface irrigation, those are the ways that you really want to water your plants. And because if you don't get good water on the plants, it's going to stunt its growth. It's not going to grow well. The fruit production is going to be less on it. Just overall, it's not going to do well. And one of the other things you're going to find, too, is critter damage. Going back to critters again, they're going to come looking for moisture during a drought. So you may find, like, squirrels taking your tomatoes. Like, why? Nothing ever eats tomatoes. During a drought, critters will go looking for that juice or the moisture that's within the fruit and take a bite out of it, and you're out of luck, and they're in luck.
Well, I've always noticed that. And again, hey, it's their survival out there, and anytime there is a drought, they do come looking for crops they typically would not eat. They do go, because again, they're looking for the water factor. Now, should I be continue to take notes or taking pictures? My garden, what should I be doing?
Yes, one more thing on the drought too, just to review that real fast. It's also going to usually be hot during the drought too. So a lot of your pollen on some of your plants gets damaged. Like tomato pollen over 90 degrees is damaged, so it's not going to pollinate. So you may not see a lot of fruit set during a hot, dry period. And one of the things you want to do is to keep your notes and take pictures of your garden at different times. And the reason for that is so that you learn what grew well, how the spacing worked out well, where you messed up on the spacing, and how high things grow, so you know how high to make your cages or your stakes for next year. So it's very good to keep those notes and read them next year before you start planting out there. And I've been doing this for 35 years, and I still don't always get my spacing right. There's times like, why did I put so many seeds in there? And it's really hard in the spring when you got a little tiny seed or a little plant that's 4 or 5 inches tall, and you have to have that vision. It's like, how big is this plant going to be? So pictures and notes where you maybe, I yell at myself on my notes. I put exclamation points and all that to reinforce the fact, like, you have to space these more than you did last year.
And for me, because I'm just the guy who just loves to take photos, you know, we're always filming with Joey B TV out across the country, and you know, those that you watch me or listen on Tumblr and Twitter and Flickr and Facebook and all those other social media outlets, I do put up a photo a day. My social media gal is out there, captions that go on, and I'm constantly taking photos of my plants, constantly, specifically my perennial flower gardens, because if we're not filming somewhere and I'm off for a day and I want to send up a photo, it's something that goes there. So just photos sometimes are just fun to be out there. Now, what about the areas or plants that are done producing? There's going to be a time when they shut off.
Yeah, some plants put all their energy into making their fruits, like right away. And then as soon as they're done with that, they stop and those plants are finished. Some plants will keep producing, like an indeterminate plant, like a tomato will keep going, you know, for eternity almost, or till frost, till the plant's gone. Other plants, they kind of do their thing, make their fruit. And remember what a plant's trying to do. It's trying to make fruit with seed in it, because its whole idea is it's trying to perpetuate itself in nature by producing seeds that will be cast about, you know, by the plant or by birds that eat the fruit or people that eat the fruit. So that's another reason for picking things small too. Another good reinforcement on that is that if you don't let the plant go to seed, it'll produce for a longer period of time, you know, especially string beans. The more you pick them, the more they'll keep going and going, you know, until the plant is finally, you know, gives up. But once you see a plant has given up, like, get it out of there, get it out of the way. Don't let it waste nutrients in the soil, because it may keep trying to grow, but it's not going to produce any fruit. So yank it out, throw it in the compost pile, and then see what we're going to do with that space that we have there that's vacant now.
Well, you know, something, as you mentioned about the plants and their job is that seed production, and as it gets closer to the end of that plant, you will see the plant with a huge burst of fruit because it's saying, hey, I'm going to die. Let me put out as many seeds as I possibly can. So sometimes it's that last burst, but that's the reason why you do have that last burst. Now, what is succession planting?
Well, that's where we're going to make use of that vacant space we have now, because if we don't make use of that space, nature will. She'll fill it with weeds and other things that you don't want, undesirable things in there. So you want to have let's say we're putting beans in, those are 50 to 60 day crop, And then when they're done, we can get another round of beans going in there, another round of squash. So like peas, I have my peas. They're done in June. So once I take my peas out, that whole area becomes available for a sowing of corn, squash, and beans in that area, the Three Sisters. And I get that area all repurposed again. And I'll find that now as other squash start to go bad, then I'll take them out. The boars maybe got that squash, the vine, and I'll take that out and maybe get another squash going in there. So there's just all you're doing is succeeding with a next generation of planting.
Now, based on what you just said, so then what's a cover crop?
Well, cover crop, if for some reason it's maybe kind of late in the season and you don't really have time to get things growing that are going to produce fruits or vegetables, a cover crop could be something like rye or vetch and clovers. And these are things that you throw, seeds you put in there that grow and cover the area to suppress the weeds and bring up nutrients from the subsoil. And then in the spring, you would cut them down and then rototill them in to add tilt to the soil and nutrients to the soil.
Yeah, that's a big nitrogen boost when you're doing the cover crop stuff there. So how do I determine what I should be planting in, this is now late in the season, in August or September?
Well, again, we're looking at short season things now, maybe lettuces, arugulas, some string beans, maybe some cucumbers, you might get lucky, and maybe a winter squash. You got to look at the packet and see something that says 40 to 60 days. If it requires longer than that time period, you know, to grow and to produce, then you may not have quite enough time to do that. So look for short season crops that you have a chance to get them in.
Well, the sun's going to be in the sky for a shorter period of time, so don't things grow slower with that shorter day?
Yes, they will definitely grow slower. That's when they look at the number of days on the package, that's for the peak time. So obviously we're growing in a non-peak time now. The days are getting shorter. There's less sun on the crops, so the plants are not going to be getting that sun. They should be getting rain in the fall. You know, most areas have wet fall, so we should be okay. The temperatures are cooler, so if the plant needs a lot of heat, it may not do that well. But it's a couple of seeds. What's the cost? And it's worth a shot to see if you can get another round. It's like a challenge, you know, to keep that garden going for as many months as you can, you know, in your yard.
And you mentioned about the temperature, and you also mentioned about the lettuce, and lettuce is that cool weather crop, so typically later in the season you can get that.
Right.
So one of the things we haven't addressed here, and I know you have one of the greatest ones, or the greatest I've ever seen, what about your compost pile?
Well, the compost piles are important now because you're making compost for next year. And you should have been doing this all through the summer. And one of the main things people forget is the compost pile can get dry, depending on how you're composting, in a bin or out in the open or within hay bales or whatever method you're using. You want to make sure that you keep that pile moist, like a wrung-out sponge, so that the activity can still occur in there. The microbes and all can continue their thing, that the worms will stay there because it's moist and keep breaking things down. And you want to make sure you're pile staying balanced. It's easy to get out of balance this time of year because you're throwing greens in there and you're not getting the browns in there, so you need that carbon. So you may have a lot of grass clippings or a lot of plants, and the plant, the pile may be getting stinky or just slowing down. It's not warming up and doing its thing. So you want to get some carbon, whether you save some old leaves or you can go find some in the bushes or in the way back of your yard. Or you can use a newspaper just with black print, no color print. You can shred some newspaper in there. That'll give you some carbon in there, and that'll help to get the pile back to a balance.
Well, here's a question that we get often by gardeners, because, again, they're out there, and then as the season goes on, they go, I'm tired of weeding. Can I stop?
Just like critter control, weeds never stop. It's very important to get the weeds out of there because they're going to try and go to seed. Remember, a weed's job is to perpetuate itself. So if you don't keep pulling them out there, it's going to make seeds, and next year you're going to have more weeds than you had the year before. So weeding, you got to keep going now. Whether maybe you can get somebody to help you, you got some relatives or some friends or people that you're giving bounty to. It's like, hey, how about coming over and working off some of the cucumbers or some of the squash? Maybe they'll come over and give you a half hour or hour or something, help you weed a little bit. But that's where mulching comes into, using plastic mulches and natural mulches. Try to suppress the weeds in the garden beds as best you can, so that all you have to really is keep the walkways open.
Now, you grow a number of, I'll say, winter vegetables like carrots and butternut squash. What about these?
Well, these are something now you want to leave, like butternut squash or winter squash. You want to leave them on the vines as long as you possibly can. The longer they cure on the vines, the better they will store and the better flavor they'll have. So you pretty much leave them on until the vine starts to give up the ghost and really gets kind of withered. And then you can make sure you use a tool and cut off, leave a little stem on your butternut squash or your delicata or whatever kind of winter squash you have. Carrots can kind of stay in the ground. They're really good. They can stay up until when the ground freezes. So you just pick them as you need them. Just store them in the ground. They're a lot of fun to grow carrots. We got a different type this year. I finally learned to buy seed tape for my carrot seed because carrot seeds are very, very tiny and hard to deal with. I tried every method to thin them out and space them. And I just buy the seed tape this year. So they offer the variety I like, and I have pretty much automatic spacing for the most part now, and it's been a lot better carrot production from what I can see. I have a lot of tops, so hopefully there's a lot of bottoms with the tops.
And those carrots tend to be one of my favorite garden vegetables. It's funny, even if you go to wherever your favorite grocery chain is and you buy an organic carrot right there, or you pull one from the garden, as usual, everything from the garden is just more tasty. But those carrots are, once again, I use the word spectacular, one of the best things. Now, we've been talking about your garden. What about your lawn? Should I be thinking about taking care of my lawn at this time of the year?
Right. If we have a lawn area and we've opted to do that because we want the nitrogen from the clippings or whatever, we should continue to monitor the lawn for insect damage or disease so you can kind of get a handle on that and start thinking about areas that may require renovation, areas that got damaged maybe from animals, you know, from dogs, or from something falling or whatever happened to that area, or an area that's soggy. Maybe you want to loosen up the soil in that area or get rid of the low spot that's there that's collecting water. But just keeping an eye on it, making sure you're keeping your lawnmower sharp, very important late in the season now. You know, we've been using our lawnmower. We've probably cut our lawn 20 or 25 times. Did you sharpen your blade? That's very important this time of year so you don't tear the lawn, and which allows it to dry out quicker during these drought and hot times, and it can invite disease into the lawn too. So either get a spare blade and switch them out, or take your machine down and have the guys throw a new edge on that blade for you.
Well, you know something, as you mentioned that, if you're tearing instead of cutting, it's stress to the plant, to the grass itself. That's one of the things. And then you mentioned this in a lot of the Joey B TV shows. Well, you're lawn should also be organic, because if your runoff from your lawn is into your garden, we want that to be organic. Hey, and we would love for all of our neighbors to be organic too. We know that's not true, but hopefully we can slowly convert those that are out there. Now, weed control, disease prevention in your lawn. Time of the year, yes, no, what do you think?
Well, again, weed control, you know, all the weeds that are within your lawn, maybe they got by the barrier, the corn gluten or whatever organic method you'd use for your lawn care. Maybe some of that's breaking down now and some of the weeds are finding their way in there. You know, there's some crazy number of weed seeds that are in like every scoopful of soil, and they just stay there for years waiting to find the ideal time and moisture to grow. So the weeds are always coming at you in a lawn too. So you want to try and get them, if you have an organic spray of some type, or again, hand-to-hand combat to dig them out, you know, and control them so they don't become too invasive for the following year. And a lot of weeds actually sprout in the fall. So it's a good time of year to get your preventative methods down there, the barrier preventions that you use, so those weeds don't sprout or they'll be all over the place next spring. And also just walking on your ground. Maybe you're walking the same area of the lawn the whole time, or the mailman's walking the whole area. So you're getting like a path on your lawn. It's getting compacted there. The lawn, it has a trail on it now. So trying to reroute yourself or other people that are coming on a daily basis, especially when the ground's wet, trying to keep them walking at different areas of the lawn so you don't get those trails going through there.
Now, it's getting towards the end of the season, and I'm talking about the end of August, September. Should I start looking for end of the season sales this time of the year?
Sure. I mean, everybody's looking now to clear out their warehouses, you know, try to get things out to the public. So maybe you have a tool that's starting to get a little tired or dull, or you see the new style tool that's out. It's a great time to get discounts on tools and stock up for next year. Tools don't go bad, so you can buy them now and just put them away for next time. And then supplies. A lot of the supplies are generally shelf stable, so you can buy some things now that'll be good for next year. I don't know if I would buy seed now for next year, because you have to really know how to store your seed. I like to have fresh seed every year, but many seeds are good for a couple of years if they're stored properly. They don't lose their germination rate. But looking for any type of year-end sales on lawn products too, you may find those now too, even though this is the time of year to really start thinking about lawn renovation. People will try to clear out their warehouses if they have an overstock on things.
And as you mentioned about looking for those sales, then when I look for my perennial flowers, if I'm going to add a new variety in somewhere, it's typically the time of the year you're going to go to a nursery and it'll be a 2-for-1 sale, sometimes even a 3-for-1 sale, because they're trying to clear out. Because again, they're in their minds, many times, many of them are thinking about Christmas. You know, they have to have all that space for Christmas trees and all that. So that is a great time for perennial purchases. So when does your gardening season end?
As soon as the first killing frost comes. I'm trying to get things growing up until the last possible day out there. And that's another reason why you want to do the succession cropping, is because you don't really know exactly when the frost is going to come. You have an idea what the frost dates can be historically, but you might get lucky. You might get great weather into November. I mean, I remember I was picking corn, believe it or not, in November in my backyard. And that's pretty cool to get corn that late in the season. That's because I just kept planting it. Like, I had extra seed, I put a couple more in, see what happens. And I got super lucky on that. And most everything else will keep growing. Tomatoes, if they're indeterminate, will keep growing and growing, you know, until the frost finally hits them. I mean, I got pictures of snow on some of my thing. We had that one October snowstorm, and the snow fell on the tomatoes that were left out there. And it was kind of a fun picture, but the tomatoes kept going. They didn't freeze. And so when the snow was gone, the tomatoes kept going. So that was kind of a fun year. So, you know, just keep it going. And yeah, the biggest thing really is your own motivation now, because you've been gardening now for 6 months or more. Maybe you're getting tired of going out there. Things are getting busy. Holidays are coming. So it depends on your personal schedule too. And I try to take my garden out a little at a time as the plants get exhausted and things start to do. I'll take a little section out here, a little section out there. So I'm not out there like marathon man trying to pull the whole garden out like in one afternoon, which gets kind of takes the fun out of it. You know, take a little bit out at a time and compost those plants and get that area ready for next spring.
I have two more, which I think are important questions. The first one, what are the benefits of home gardening?
Well, there's so many benefits. I mean, where to start? I mean, certainly you're going to save money. It's cheaper to grow your own vegetables at home than it is to go to the store. You're reducing your carbon footprint because you're not driving to the store where a truck drove them to that store, where another truck drove it to the warehouse. You know, all you're doing is going from your backyard to your door, to your kitchen. So there's no vehicles being involved there at all. You're doing everything by hand, hopefully, maybe a little bit of rototiller gas. But other than that, you're doing pretty much everything manually. So you're having a good impact on the environment. Things are definitely have more flavor. There's nothing like vine-ripened produce for superior flavor. And superior flavor also means superior quality, which is going to make it healthier. So you definitely are going to feel better because you're eating a lot of vegetables. And, you know, man is really made to be a vegetarian. That's how we originally started out many centuries or more than centuries ago, thousands of years ago. We were more vegetarians than meat eaters. So it's definitely a healthier way. You're going to feel better in the summertime. Why? Because you're eating out of the garden. You're eating good, fresh stuff. And it's a great place to exercise. You know, you get out there and get a little workout. Build up your resistance to the sun and to the heat a little bit, so you're really ready to do other things. If you work outside, it makes you more weather ready. And it's just a great hobby. I mean, it's just fun to get you out there digging in the dirt, talking to the worms, enjoying the butterflies and the bees. Maybe you have a neighbor or someone you know nearby that gardens, and you come out, hang out together, you know, have a glass of water and take a look at everything that's out there and enjoy the garden and talk trade secrets of like who's doing the best. And it's just a great way to kind of bond with people too. And then you become one of the most popular guys in the neighborhood, at least during harvesting season, where people, hey, you got any tomatoes left? Or you got any of those cucumbers? So it's a great way to make friends and new friends too. You know, I have new neighbors now, so I'm going to be introducing them into the organic gardening because they garden now, but they're chemical people, so I want to see if I can convert them. So I'll let them taste my things and realize the superior quality of it and all.
And as you mentioned, there are so many people that I will speak to that they'll go, oh yeah, I just got back into gardening, or it's the first year I ever had a garden. And they said it was one of the most enjoyable experiences in their lifetime, just spending that quality time out there in nature. So my last question, but the important one, Where can I learn more about organic gardening, organic methods?
Well, certainly on Joey B TV website. We have lots of videos on there, how to do videos, and they're all 3 to 5 minutes long, very well made. The quality is good of the sound, and we give you good in-depth lessons on step-by-step how from starting, selecting a site, right up to the harvesting time and composting. So there's plenty of little videos on there to look at. And then just go into your library looking for organic books that may be there. Going online, there's organic magazines that are out there. There may be a community garden nearby. Hopefully they're doing organic methods. You may get some people there. And there's master gardeners that are around through different extension colleges or universities. They may run seminars and on organic methods of doing things. So, but stay with the organic method. That's absolutely a superior way to go. It's cheaper and more healthy and it's a way to do it. So there's lots and lots and lots of information out there.
Well, you know, Inspector Dave, every time we're together, whether we're in the garden, in the studio, fly fishing somewhere on a cool river somewhere, I always learn something from you. And our listeners today, they absolutely, I'm sure they learned. And the same way we talk about gardening, enjoyed listening to you. So I just want to thank you for stepping into the studio today. I looked at the clock and go, holy moly, we've been speaking for a long time. But the information that you gave is so valuable. So thanks for stopping by today.
Okay, thank you for having me. It's always fun to come to the studio.
Thank you, Inspector Dave. You can follow all of my adventures online at joeyb.tv. That's joeyb.tv. And a very special thank you to the men and women of our armed forces for keeping us free, and for our police and firefighters for keeping us safe. May God bless America. Until next time, this is Joey B. Enjoy life's adventures.
Joey B's at the adventure. Joey B's at the adventure. Joey B's at the adventure. Joey B's at the adventure.
That was awesome.